Welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for listening. It's good to have you with us again. I'm Henrik, and we're coming to you from Sweden, Scandinavia. And if you want to find out more about what we do and follow us on a regular basis, please visit our website, redicecreations.com. You can also check out redicemobile.com for all you guys out there with mobile devices. And then we have, of course, redicemembers.com, where you can get the full story. Today we're talking with George Kavassalas. He's been with us three times before, but in case you need a reminder, he is a speaker and author of Our Universal Journey. He's had hundreds of interactions with both benevolent and malevolent beings from many different levels of realities, both on and off world. In 2003, he says he took a journey with his conscious spirit through the dimensions of our universe, and he was able to remember who we all are, where we come from, and where we are headed, sharing this knowledge with the world in order to assist humanity in reclaiming our sovereignty. Today we're going to specifically talk about the model of the universe, the cosmic matrix, and what he calls the great arena. We'll discuss energetic programs that feed into false realities. Welcome back to the program, George. Good to have you with us again. Thank you for coming on. Hope everything is good with you down in Oz.
Hi, Henrik, and yeah, everything is great, and I just want to thank you also for once again giving me the opportunity to have a voice on your fantastic program. Thank you.
You bet. It's always nice to have you back and talk about your stuff and your work, and now, of course, you have a book out as well that we're going to dive into. I have a copy in my hand, and I've been enjoying it very much, Our Universal Journey. Tell us about the book, George, and why you wanted to pin down some of your ideas, obviously, in book form, and when you kind of when it was released in September, I think, and it's your first book as well, correct?
It is my first book, and it's kind of ironic for someone who doesn't read books to have actually written a book. I'm not a reader. I've read probably about 10 books in my entire life, and but in my journey of last year, my world tour, and a lot of speaking engagements in different countries. So many people were saying to me, why don't you write a book? Why don't you write a book? And
sure.
I'm just not a booky person, you know. And when we got back from our tour, I just started feeling this urge to write a book. And so I did. I gave it a go, and it took about 12 months from the actual writing of the manuscript had amazingly a gestation period of 9 months, and then the book itself to get it finalized and what have you. Took about 12 months to complete. So it was quite a cathartic process for me too, Henrik, because
yeah.
I had certain ideas that I wanted to put down at the start of writing the book, and it changed. It took me on a journey, and some things changed as I was writing.
Definitely. Was it so it was difficult? Because sometimes it's pretty, pretty difficult to nail down your ideas and get them out in written form. It's different to speak or talk about it, but then once you sit down with a pen and paper, same thing for me anyway, I feel it's kind of, it's more difficult to write it, basically.
Incredibly challenging and interesting, too, when you do start to write something and you have an idea about something, then as you're putting your pen to paper, so to speak, or your fingers to the keyboard, and you're writing, what starts to emanate from within you changes because you're reaching new levels of wisdom and you're going into this amazing place within yourself and you're reaching deeper into levels that you ever have before because that's your focus now and your intention to put this knowledge and information out to the wider community. So it has morphed into something far different than what I first expected.
Definitely. Let's talk about some of the basics, I guess, of the book and some of the things that you touch upon and go into. And we can kind of cover it, one thing a little bit at a time here, if you will. And because there's some, you know, important ideas and you try to, I guess, condense your story and you do go into it a little bit and some of the things you've gone through and basically try to describe, right, who we are, where we're coming from and where we're going, I guess, right?
Yeah, it really is a very serious and substantial attempt at having a go at answering those four, what I call and consider the four primordial questions of who are we, where do we come from, what are we doing here, and where are we headed. So it really does share information that is beyond the paradigms we call science, the paradigms we call religion, and the paradigms also that we call the New Age and the occult paradigms. So once you get beyond those four main groupings of paradigms, because that's exactly what they are, then you start to get in touch with reality. Because what I'm essentially saying here is, in order to get in touch with reality, we need to get beyond all the programs that we've been exposed to. And that can be really difficult for a lot of people. Well, I'm going to say it's difficult for everyone. I don't know anybody who hasn't found that journey, the journey of the truth seeker, a very simple and easy journey. Yeah. I just haven't. I don't know about yourself.
Nope. I think it's a pretty rare thing, if so. And if they have, if they claim to have discovered the truth with ease, day one, then it's probably something I would be pretty skeptical of anyway. So. All right, good stuff. Now, let's talk a little bit about history. I guess that's an important thing to cover. You do cover it in the beginning again as well, and talk about the fact that most of it is a misrepresentation. Most people are living in a lie in that sense, if you will. Tell us a little bit about history, George.
Yeah, because we are. We unfortunately can take a stone tablet that's 5,000 years old and have a look at it, and people will decipher it and think, oh, well, this is what happened. And people just forget the idea that back then people had to contend with issues of, control of governmental structures, of hierarchical structures, and people in charge, and people disseminating information to the masses in a way that those people in control wanted the masses to perceive life and to perceive a particular situation, even a battle in war, for example. History's always been written by the victors, so to speak, and that's so true. And so we're always really looking back at back through time and into the past civilizations and cultures by the hand that has written down circumstances and events with a tainted, with a slant and a slanted perspective. And it's no different to the way the media today puts a slant on things. Well, in ancient times you had scribes, and how about a guard standing there with a spear, at the throat of the scribe saying, you're going to write it like this, because things written in stone last a very long time. So when you have characters in history that were actually really good people, but because the scribes or the people writing the stone tablets didn't like these people, then they wanted them to be known as nefarious characters down through time. So they presented a more, unfavorable and cynical perspective on these people. And that's what we're left with. Because if you look at also how all these civilizations have been decimated, and I've seen a pattern emerge where a lot of the good information has been removed, and what's been left conveniently for archaeologists, paleontologists and of the likes and academia of the like to actually discover and present to humanity is very systematic. It really presents a particular point of view, a particular perspective of the history of humanity.
Indeed. Yeah, I agree. It's pretty interesting. And then we end up trying to figure out by studying that history of who we are, where we come from, where we're going, and accordingly, obviously, if that is faulty or false in that regard, it's going to be problematic. So how much do you think that we can and should base our own existence upon that which has happened in history, instead of maybe trying to figure out for ourselves who we are and what we're doing here?
Well, I think reincarnation, or just the concept of that, just understanding that we've had more than one life here. I've got memories of having lives back in ancient times. I feel the greatest thing anybody can do is just feel back into their own journey on this planet if they've had more than one life here. And you get a really, really good understanding of, a much greater understanding of how things played out and the circumstances. Just because it's written in stone doesn't mean it's true. If we're to just take academia's an academic perspective and what academia presents to us as truth, and what a professor who themselves have been programmed by a curriculum and who are seeing now and deciphering stone tablets through the filter and through the lenses of those curriculum, you know, and because independent thought is really something that gets quashed within people the further they go through the system. It's a very difficult thing for anyone to be well advanced in the system and to have independent thought. Usually they'll be career assassinated very, very quickly. So I would say we've got to really be careful what we choose to take as something that's credible or something that's actually, for want of a better term, truthful. And that includes everything that we all say and everything that I say as well, because really the only truth that you're ever going to get that's real is deep within each and every one of us. It's deep inside us. We all have it. That's the part of us that's connected to everything in the universe. So use that as your BS meter is what I like to call it.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the universe, I guess. You have a universal model that you've come up with, I guess, based on your experiences. And we can certainly talk as well about what the purpose is and what we're going through when we're in it as an experience. But tell us about the model first, George.
Yeah, the model of the universe is how I experienced it. You've got, it's just like looking at a radio station dial. It's probably the best way to explain it for people who are not familiar with the understanding of different frequencies and different realities. I know the majority of the listeners understand that, but there'll be some who probably haven't ventured into that realm. And so the way the universe is structured is the basic foundation building block of this universe is what we call light. It's also called frequency or sound, or known as logos, or it's also known as the word. And because the word of God is not letters written on a piece of paper in a book. That's the words of a priestly caste. That's not the word of God. The word of God is a vibrational blueprint of life, which is the foundation to the creation of life within this universe. And, of course, we exist beyond this universe. And so we have main frequency bands and spectrum. So when you look at a radio station dial, for example, you've got a frequency and you've got a radio station on that frequency. You hear listening to music, certain people discussing things. Then you shift frequencies. You go from 104.7 to 107.9 FM on the FM band, for example, and you hit another reality. Now, it's another frequency and another reality, different people, different music, and a whole different, like I said, reality. And then there's another one again and again and again. And that's what, like, the universe is set up. We have different bands of frequencies, different layers of frequencies, and there's, like, 12 main frequencies that I've discovered myself in my journey in this universe. And there's also the way these 12 main layers of frequency are presented too. There's these two very distinct voids as well. And there's two voids. There's a void between the, if we look from the top down, I'm going to go use the conventional model now, because down here we conventionally have been entrained mentally to see this as the third dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Really, when you look at it from the top down, we're looking into the 10th level, you know, if you want to put it the other way around. But I'll just stay with a traditional train of thought because it'll just confuse people. So between the 7th and the 8th dimensions, there is a universal void, and that's seen with the 12th dimension as the top dimension. And, of course, we, you know, exist well beyond that into our eternal state of being. And then further down in this universe, we have between the 4th and the 5th what's known as the Great Void. It's a very big and substantial void relative to the other one. And these voids play very important roles because they kind of, create a, yes, on one level a barrier, but they also create these different sections within the universe which function, have different functions, very, very important functions. So there's three distinct groupings of layers of frequency. So the top one is the realm of the soul, which is the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th dimensions. The middle section, which is the 5th, 6th, and 7th dimensions, is the the first one I left out, the eighth dimension as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now the middle section being the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions, I call that the realm of the higher self, and then below the fifth, going the fourth, the third, the second, and the first dimensions, is what I call the great arena. Now, within the great arena are what quantum physics refers to as parallel universes. Now, I'm sharing this for people to get a bit of a scope and an understanding of the magnitude of what we're talking about here. So, again, below the fifth dimension, so we're talking fourth, third, second, and first dimensions, within that spectrum of layers of frequencies, there are entire universes contained, multiple, countless, basically, within that spectrum of frequencies. So it gives people a bit of an idea of the size and the magnitude that we're discussing here.
Is everybody on the same level is wrong than dimension, maybe, or is this something that one progresses through or can go into another dimension?
Well, when we first entered this universe, because we wanted to learn how to be like this universe, so, you know, we entered from the top and we've projected down through all these different levels. So let's say we talk about the fifth dimension. A lot of New Age stuff talks about ascending to 5D,
sure.
For example.
Yep.
The reality is we're already there. There's still an aspect of you or multiple aspects of you in the fifth dimension because you projected from there. It doesn't mean you left there. You're still there. So all we need to do is reintegrate with those higher aspects of ourselves. And we do that from within ourselves, not outside of ourselves.
So do these have, I could explain, do these have different properties? If we think about the first three, we can understand that they have, a function to them to be able to give us an opportunity to operate within the universe, you know, of width, height, and, depth and all that. And as we go up, some people claim time is part of it and some of the other properties as well. Is that how you see it as well, George?
Yeah, well, the time in the universe has to do with cycles. You know, we're experiencing time here in a linear fashion. And when you go and start reintegrating and experiencing these higher levels, time is cyclic. And different cycles of time, cycles within cycles, wheels within wheels. So it's a different experience of time. And it'll depend on what realm you're in, what level. You still experience that to a certain degree, other realities in a linear fashion. But also, when you get to these higher realms, you get the capacity, like in the fifth dimension, as the higher self, even on that level, you have the capacity to be all things at once in this universe. Now, we're talking about massive amounts of processing. You know, it boggles the mind because what I'm talking about, these concepts are beyond the mind. So the mind and our mental programming will struggle with these concepts. We need to move beyond that and move into our heart space. When I say heart space, I don't mean heart chakra. I mean to the core essence of your soul, essence of your beingness. When we start reintegrating with that, we can transcend these mental concepts that we've been programmed with. And I'll give you an example of what the reality is like in the fifth dimension above that great void.
Mm-hmm.
Above that great void, there's no such thing as technology. It doesn't exist. Everything is achieved through organic consciousness. And below that great void is where technology begins to exist. Now, below that great void, all beings need to consume something in order to survive. And that includes when you hear beings living off light energy, for example. Well, that means they're consuming light energy, even though they won't present it that way. Above the void, no one consumes anything. Everybody is pure light. We are the pure light in those realms. So we don't need to consume anything in the fifth dimension. Also, below that great void in the fourth and below is healers exist. In the fifth and above, no such thing as healers. They don't exist because there is no dis-ease. Everything is in perfect harmony and synchronicity with life. So there is no such thing as healers. They don't exist.
Tell us a little bit about the different entities and what levels or dimensions, again, that they operate in. I think that's always interesting to hear. We've talked about some of this in the past, but I think it's important to kind of run through some of this again so we kind of lay the groundwork here, if you will, George.
Yeah, this is really key, Henrik. This is a very big key to understanding the supreme deception that's being imposed upon humanity, because it is a multidimensional assault on our humanity. And the programs, the more sophisticated programs that are being implemented here, are light-based programs, because we are light-based beings. You know, so we've got the electromagnetic matrix and mind matrix that we're akin to, because so many people have discussed that, and its origins are emanating to us by the moon locally, okay? Now, we're going to take this to the next level, because that was just commentary on the earthly matrix. What a lot of people don't take into consideration is the cosmic matrix. And the cosmic matrix is colossal. It contains within it multiple universes. And we have these entities, which I refer to in the book as God entities. And these God-like entities have created a false light structure. And they are massive mind, God mind entities. There are nothing you can, like, from this level, put your finger on. It's like they're not tangible. They're just a mind entity. They're very, very powerful. And it's very important to respect their capabilities. A lot of people make the mistake of disrespecting them, and that's where they come undone. It's really important to always, I'm just going to quote this from, you know, it's the art of war, isn't it? Always mm-hmm. respect your enemy in a way, even though ultimately they are not our enemies. They are in service to us from a much higher realm. It's very important to respect their capabilities and the programs of limitations that these entities are imposing on us, because I'm just going to go straight into the deep end here and say there is the God of religions, and then there is the creator of the universe. And it's very, very important to understand the distinction between the two, because the God of religions is an entity that solicits worship and assimilates people into its programs, whereas the creator of the universe is vastly grander than that. You know, it's much greater than that, and doesn't behave in these sorts of ways whatsoever.
So these entities, and I guess we could call one of them Yahweh, right? We could do we attribute these entities to a certain dimension here, and are they stuck, if you will, on that level, and hence this is only the method that they can achieve nourishment by getting people to basically feed into the system that they've created, or how does that work?
Yeah, exactly. That's so well put. You've really understood it there, Henry, for you to have worded it in that way. They do need nourishment from the energy of other beings. They've created paradigms the size of universes, and they've assimilated countless races into these paradigms. And they do offer, a blissed out version of reality. It's what they refer to as their heavenly realms. And they go about making, implementing programs in different planetary systems, including ours, to lure and assimilate as many people as they can, because whilst on one level they're offering something wonderful and fantastic, on another level they are feeding energetically off these beings without them realizing it. And once you do realize it, it's a very, very difficult thing to get away from. So Yahweh is definitely one of them. It's one name or a label that's been given. There's just so many. And so I say to people, take these labels into consideration. You know, Jehovah's another and what have you. But be very careful with labels, because anyone can call anything anything. It always comes down to the intention of the being, the intent and the energy, and does it resonate with an area deep in the core of your own being and your soul essence, because it's your soul essence that is in oneness and harmony with the real creator of this universe.
Let's talk about, you call it the road to compression as well, the kind of the purpose of what we're doing here. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it explains density. I've got memories of a time before this galaxy was created. And to understand who and what this galaxy is then enables one to understand who and what the solar system is and who and what this planet is. And that then becomes self-explanatory as to who we are and what we're doing here. So understanding our immediate cosmic surroundings is fundamental to our existence. But you see, all these other programs that have been implemented here are designed to sever that awareness and to sever the relationship, most importantly, that we're having with these, with this planetary being, with this solar being, and with this galactic being. So this road to compression began with this idea from the Creator, the feminine expression of the Creator, to create a reality which was going to be a fractal of the universe. So what was done was they, well, so I'm going to say we, because I can't say they, we co-created, what we did was, and includes the majority of people incarnate on this planet, we took a galactic system, an entire galactic system, everything that it's done, everything that it's been, all the wisdom gained, all the beings involved in the creation of that galactic system with its billions of stars and its countless planetary systems and beings that are chose to incarnate into that system and have all their incredible experiences. We then compressed it and created a fractal reality out of it and created and represented that whole galactic system now embodied in the form of a star. And that star system, this compressed version of life, was then inserted into a galaxy. And then we took another galactic system and did the same, and another and another and another. And so what we ended up was with a galaxy, which we call the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy, which then was known as the Galactic Womb on a universal level and was a fractal of the entire universe. And once that was experienced as a galactic reality, we then took it a step further and created a single star system reality, which was then a fractal of the galaxy, which in turn is a fractal of the universe. And then we took it a step further again and created a single planetary reality. And once all the possibilities and outcomes were experienced there, meaning this planet, we then took it a step further and created a single embodiment, which was to be a fractal of the universe. So our embodiment is a fractal of this planet, which is in turn a fractal of the solar system, which is in turn a fractal of the galaxy, which is in turn a fractal of the universe. So we've been on this road to compression because what we're doing is our journey through the universe, we project into a myriad of realities and domains. And what we're doing now is bringing that all back into balance. So we're bringing it all back into zero point through the eye of the needle, so to speak.
Does that to you mean that the human body is an important part in this for our soul to be able to incarnate in this way? And also, does that mean that you include, evolution in this? Or do you have a different take on that mankind has been around for a much longer period of time than that? Or just, because as you're talking about this, it feels like evolution in a sense fits into it. Because if this is about creating an environment for the soul, if you will, then the when the human body came onto the scene, if you will, came onto the planet, then that's a major part in that, correct?
Absolutely. We are the principal life form of this planet, not from an egotistical point of view, okay? From a functional point of view, from a practical and realistic point of view, and from an intentional point of view. And the reason is this is the final arena, the final frontier, the final battleground, you could say, is the internal arena. It's within each and every one of us. This is where our traveling spirit of the great arena meets up with our soul. This is us going back home. This is about our journey home. And there's this notion being propagated on this planet that we are at the bottom of the universe, that we are scraping the bowels, and that we in the third dimension here are the lowest of the lows. We're just a bunch of lowly sinners, and we need mentoring, and we actually need, dare I say, custodianship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so these are the key, yeah, you get it. See, these are the key elements of these notions and these ideologies that get propagated here, because they're being propagated by beings who are insanely jealous of who and what we are. You know, and I've had a lot of meetings with a lot of races, and I can tell you that out there we are held in the highest of regard and the highest of esteem, because whilst genetically speaking we are one of the youngest races in the universe, the beings that occupy these vessels, our spirits, us as beings who are occupying these human vessels, we're the oldest and the wisest. And we're the ones that are showing the way. We are the way showers, and we're the ones that had the courage to embark on this road to compression and to make ourselves completely vulnerable to the forces of limitation.
Well, that makes sense. I've always said, even when it comes to children and such, they hold, if there is an upgrade or a progression of the DNA or the genetics, if you will, then the younger ones are going to have something which is older when it comes to advancements, if you know what I mean. So even if the human race has come along later onto the scene, and if this is a combination, let's say, of other races or it's been brought together in some way, then sure, it's younger, but it's going to represent something that it's far much older. So that idea kind of makes sense to me, actually.
Yeah, and it explains also the density of this reality, totally explained the fractal of this reality and our solar reality and our galactic reality being fractals. It explains that. And also the abductions. Why are there so many extraterrestrial races here interested in our genetics? It makes perfect sense. Everything fits into this model, and that's what's freaking people out. It actually does fit, and including timelines. Why have all these other beings come back at this moment in time? You know, what's so important about Earth, this moment in time, and our humanity? What's the big deal? You know, when we realize that, hang on a minute, we've entered into this galactic womb, and I mean womb for a reason, and then we entered into the solar arena. It's kind of a solar womb, but it's a masculine energy. The sun is masculine. And then we entered the planetary womb. And I'll go and make this statement. I'm a universal embryo in the planetary womb of the Divine Mother. So once again, it's important for us to remember who this woman is we're incarnate upon. That remembrance has been severed from our conscious awareness. To remember who it is you're incarnate upon is fundamentally crucial and critical to remembering who you are. Because if you can't even remember your immediate cosmic surroundings, you're just going to be taken away by some program.
Now, tell us more about the womb idea here, because you talked quite a bit about that in the book. So describe it a little bit more in detail for people.
Yeah, the idea of us coming here and entering this planetary womb at the end of this road to compression and experiencing the final arena, which is our internal arena, what we're doing is we're bringing everything back into balance, all of our creations. And so by doing that, we are then in the process of birthing anew. It's kind of like I've journeyed through this universe. I've projected myself into every single reality that exists. I've experienced everything there is to experience. I've seen everything there is to do, and I've been everything there is to be in this universe. Now I'm at graduation point after embarking on this road to compression. So what's happening is now is all my creations, because, you know, as we move through this universe and journey through it, we co-create along the way. So we're all out there. We're galaxies. We're planets. We're stars. And this is all the forgotten knowledge of who and what we are. And we're pseudo-universal paradigms as well in the great arena. And so we've co-created enormous realities, and we're responsible for all those creations and facilitating all those experiences for people to have that have chosen to enter our realities and domains. And we're bringing all of that back into balance. And so the reason is it's like graduation point. So this birthing into this new way of life is really about graduating and mastering what the construct we call light in this universe.
There's a lot of things I want to ask you about. You brought up some interesting ideas earlier, and maybe we'll revisit that later when it comes to timelines and time-traveling entities and races and all that. But I do want to give you opportunity to talk about December 21st, 2012, here in the first hour before we take a break, because you wanted to get into that, and it kind of connects, I guess, a little bit with what we've already been getting into here a little bit, and it's, where are we now? We're about less than two months away, and it feels like the closer we get, the more kind of just, I shouldn't say deflated it gets, but it's definitely, I think, a lot of things that were prophesized, if you will, about the period is just kind of chugging along as usual. Nothing so far extraordinary has happened, I think, at least on the external level. But give us your take on this, George. Explain where you see this going and what the point of this, the end date of the Mayan calendar is.
Yeah, I'll stick my hand up and say, you know, I was a party to that too. There was things that I said and my perspective. And, you know, it's amazing how many people were seeing it in the same way that I was. And it kind of comes to wonder about timelines and what we actually connect to with our consciousness and how people experience the probable timelines, future timelines and what have you. So it can get quite messy and confusing and heady. But I feel there was definitely something in it, and it could be a matter of time or what have you. But I'm the first one to stand up and say, you know, there were some things that I said that I've pulled the pin on probably 12 months ago now and said, you know, I've got to retake on my ideas of what December 21, 2012 is all about. And I will say that the changes are monumental internally at the moment for me. Massive, massive changes taking place. And I talked about doorways opening up. And I will categorically say that the doorways I've been experiencing have been internal ones. And many other people have been experiencing these internal portals, you know, because the kingdom of heaven is within. Not to get religious about this, but there are threads of truth that have made it through, you know, even in those writings. And, you know, this is about freedom of spirit and sovereignty. This is what I'm about in self-empowerment. So when we do look at these doorways, these opportunities to go within ourselves and start accessing, cracking through the matrix and starting to access these greater aspects of ourselves, this is where our empowerment comes from. And December 21, 2012 to me now has, I'm really, really concerned of what it's become on the planet and what other off-world and interdimensional beings are steering it into becoming without the majority of the population realizing it. We are so in a trance. It's unbelievable. And the key to all of this is these God entities that I spoke of earlier. And another massive key is understanding that they have replicated universal light. Okay? Major key component to understanding the supreme cosmic deception.
Describe that a little bit more, George.
Whilst we have, well, the universe is made up of light, which is like the most simplified way to express light is a sine wave. So it's a universe of contrasting expressions. We express ourselves in one way, one side of that central point. You know, so you're in a centered state of being. Then you express yourself one way. Then in order for balance to be reestablished, we now need to express ourselves in a contrasting way, sort of on the other side of the line, which is in equal and opposite charge to the initial expression, hence the creation of a sine wave, hence the creation of vibration of frequency, sound, and light, and logos. So this is the basic principle of why this universe exists, because of this new way of looking at life and expressing life in the contrasting ways. And so because of that, because it's a universe of contrasting expressions, you have the universal creator, and then you have beings in the lower domains which have gone about replicating their own version of light. And I call it the false light, and I call it synthetic light. And the majority of people in the last 6,000 years have been assimilated into practices, spiritual practices and doctrines, which are to do with this synthetic light construct. And I've gone into great detail in the book to explain who created it, why it was created, how it was created, and how it's being implemented. And one of the most key fundamental programs, it has many names in many cultures. Some people call it Kundalini. Some people call it, in Christendom, the Kundalini is known as the Holy Ghost. And it is a fundamental cosmic level software program of false synthetic light that is being implemented into the human race. And the other component to that, because there's three major components to this program, is the chakra system. Mm-hmm. That is a cosmic light-based software program. And the third component is a multidimensional biological implant, which is known also as the pineal gland. Now, the three together create this incredible software and interdimensional implant program, which has been imposed onto the human race. And now this is being sold as though it is spiritual enlightenment. And I can guarantee you there's so many people, including myself, that we have now moved beyond that version of enlightenment, because that's all it is. It is someone else's version of enlightenment that's been sold to humanity. And you'll be told that you cannot live or exist without this Kundalini energy without these chakra system vortexes, and that you need them in order to be a human and in order to be an enlightened being. And that's a lie. I'm just going to come out and just tell it straight. You know me, Henrik. I don't mess around. It's a lie. And I'm living proof. I don't use those programs. I've moved beyond them. And I've never been so peaceful and I've never been so happy in all my life since I got away from these cosmic software programs. And this is a key element and a foundation to understanding December 21, 2012. Because what people are being convinced into doing is to, with all these, not only our standard or traditional religious programs of prayer and meditation, we've now got the New Age religion, which is full of, other versions of Eastern philosophies and a mix of Christian traditional philosophies. And it's the same characters, though. I mean, the characters haven't changed, really. Some of them have got different glossaries and different marketing campaigns, but it's the same characters even as though. I don't see how people can't just see that for what it is. But anyway, all these practices, meditative practices and doctrines, people are bringing in this so-called God's light, universal light, source light. Use whatever label you want. You know, anyone can label anything whatever they want. The key ingredient is, okay, God's light. All right, which God are you referring to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Universal light. Okay, which universe is it coming from? See? Source light. Okay, what is the source of that light? And people will have all these wonderful mental ideologies about what that light is because they've been assimilated into these doctrines and practices. They've been sold the program. And the marketing campaign has worked wonderfully on their mental paradigm. So people are externalizing. They're giving their power away because they're bringing light in from outside of themselves. They bring it down through the crown chakra and they anchor it into every cell of the body. And they're also asked to anchor it into the earth. And they're asked to do that by angels, ascended masters and gurus and you name it. And what is happening here is, it's got to do with the New World Order. See, a lot of people are being told, and I know I'm just going off on a bit of a tangent here, but I'm gonna bring it together because all of this is interconnected. Now, the New World Order, you're being told that the New World Order is going to be something really dark and something really evil, and you're going to be cyborgs, and you're going to be this, and you're going to be that. That is the fear campaign, because what they want you to do is to flock towards the love and light solution. See, for me, the New World Order is a passive-aggressive program. For me, the New World Order is about pacifying people, about dumbing down and entrancing people. This is about the enchanted entrapment of humanity. And if we can wake up and see this program for what it is, it's a classic problem-reaction-solution. It's a dialectic. It's been around for eons of time in the universe. It's nothing new. It's the same system that's being imposed over and over again. And they're playing it on us again now. But the key ingredient here is they've recreated the universal light, the synthetic light, and they're using a version of love. They're using love against us. That's the key ingredient here. And so now on December 21, 2012, we've got a whole lot of people, and I don't mean just a few thousand. They're already doing their practices, their meditative practices and doctrines already on all these major intersection PowerPoints on the planet. So when we look at ley lines, they are the energetic veins of Mother Earth. And the energy that runs inside of these ley lines is the energetic blood of Mother Earth. And what these people are doing is they're going to these sacred monuments like the pyramids in Egypt or Glastonbury or, pyramids in South America, wherever. But all these monuments are built on major intersecting points. So all these people are bringing all these synthetic light constructs in and anchoring them in the earth. Now, these people truly believe what they're doing is the right thing, but it shows you how blinded they are by these practices and doctrines. And so December 21, 2012 for me is turning into something that's going to be very detrimental to the well-being of my mother planet, because it's like taking a syringe and injecting a substance into your body that's not good for your body. what's going to happen? You know, when you inject something that's not good for you, you know, there's going to be a reaction. Now, how long it takes for that reaction to take place, what degree that reaction is going to be when it does happen, I don't know. All I'm saying is people need to stop and think of the consequences of their actions. They need to take stock. And they got to realize what it is they're doing, what they're involved in, and who and what, like these angels and ascended masters and Galactic Federation of Light. And you'd be surprised, Henry, this is affecting millions and millions and millions of people all around the world. And they're being, I would say, recruited to do the bidding and the work of these off-world and these interdimensional God entities. And it is very disconcerting indeed, because they want the people to, by overriding universal law, they get the people to love them first, then they get the people to do their bidding, because the people now are willingly and lovingly doing their bidding. So they want to inject all this false light here into this reality, which is going to create a more favorable environment for these beings to come and do what they need to do.
Yeah, well, I it's very interesting. It's a new spirituality for a new age, right? But as you said, it's rehashing the same old garbage over and over again, but it's in a new wrapper, it's in a new package, and this is how it's being sold. I've definitely seen this for a long time, and it's interesting you bring this up. And a lot of people are advocating, as you said as well, George, different kind of meditation sessions around 2012, and focusing on these things, and it's, as you said, as long as people don't really know what they're contributing to, it can be indeed very detrimental. Now, what would you say, let's say, to somebody who argued that, well, okay, let's assume it's a false construct that's been set up and all that, but my intentions are good, my intentions are pure, I know that I'm focusing on, let's say, the quote-unquote right thing when I'm putting this energy out there, intention out there. Does that matter, or is it truly just who's behind these concepts and the original intention? Is that where the energy goes and feeds into, if you know what I mean, George?
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of a cop-out, I'm going to say. That's someone who still can't handle taking responsibility for their actions, someone who approaches this argument in that way. And sure, it's about intention, and you mean well. Do you mean well to cause harm to Mother Earth? Do you mean well to cause harm to humanity? Further harm. We've got to be realistic about this and not be ideological about this. You know, it's staying in the headspace and just being ideological and just blissing out and consuming all this, light energy from all these other frequencies, which is on a cosmic level drug taking, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but it is. You're consuming light energy, you're blissing out, you're getting high on it, right? Mm-hmm. It's drug taking. Let's be realistic about this. And you got to do it more and more to maintain that space to what they perceive as a centered space. So, this is a really big issue. There is a simple remedy to all of this, Henrik. It really is simple. Instead of bringing the light in from some ascended master or what you people conceive as universal light, why don't people just emanate the light that's inside of themselves? Why don't people just put into the Earth's grid their soul light? Let's just turn inside out, be that toroidal construct, which is self-perpetuating, self-sustaining, and in harmony with everything and its environment around it. That's what we need to start doing. And you know what that means? That means to be authentic. And you know what, Henrik? People can't handle being authentic.
That's right.
They're too busy and too comfortable living a lie.
Yeah. I want to break down the three different components as well, like you mentioned before, and maybe we should do that in the second segment more here, about the Kundalini, the chakra system, and the pineal gland, and we can take some, talk about those in more detail, basically. But let's say that let's zoom forward, and this might be difficult, I guess, but let's see if we can head there. Let's zoom forward a few years or something like that, and maybe you can encapsulate, let's say that a majority of people are beginning to focusing on these things that you're talking about with kind of 2012 as a kind of a new religion. That's how I would term it. How would people be? Is this more like a as you said, kind of like a trance that people are in, as opposed to currently it's most of the religions, although they're meant to be spiritual, they're still very external, and this one in a sense feels the new religion feels like it's more internal. It's more something based on, as you said, you have an internal kind of state of bliss, and as you said, that might not be authentic. It might be kind of the false religion in that sense. But how do you see people being or acting or you know, looking, I guess, in that sense, for those who've kind of fed into this and you know, believed this, and let's go forward a few years. Is this possible for you to kind of lay that out for us, George?
Well, hypothetically speaking, if this was to play out, you will have a planet full of blissed out, spaced out people who will feel like they are connected to God consciously because they have been assimilated into the collective hive mind of a God entity. Now, I've experienced these collective hive minds in this lifetime on many occasions. I've been on board craft where that's what the first thing that happens when you're taken on board a craft. You are connected to the collective hive mind entity of the craft. I've been taken to other worlds, and I've had to be connected to those beings, and even taken into another universal paradigm where these God entities are the creators of those universal paradigms. And therefore, once you're in there, you need to be connected to one of these collective hive minds, or the collective hive mind of this God entity. And that's what happens when people participate in these programs, in these meditative programs of getting this serpent energy, because there's good and bad serpents. Don't get me wrong, I'm not being racist here, but I don't want this snake in my tree. You know, my tree of life is sacred to me, and I don't want this snake in my tree. It brings a whole new meaning, doesn't it, to the snake in your tree, or the snake in the tree.
Sure.
Right? And it's really important that we get this virus out of our system and go back to being natural and organic. And people are going through this practice of getting this kundalini to go up their spine and to hit the pineal gland. And the pineal gland's like a tuner. And anybody knows anything about calibration, anything about radio waves, anything about tuners, right? Even just your television. When you alter or calibrate your tuner on your television to receive a particular program, that's what you're going to receive. So when people are doing these meditative practices and they're doing their kundalini and chakra practices and they get it to hit the pineal gland, then depending on their program, on the doctrine, on the practice, whether it's a Jesus program, you know, the Seven Seals Holy Ghost version, or whether it's, you know, an Eastern philosophy by a guru, or it's Archangel Michael getting you to do it, doesn't matter. It's all the same program. It's just being repackaged and presented and marketed in a different way. But the general location is going to be the same. Sure, you're going to have a slightly different experience to someone who's doing a Christian-based version of the same program, and you're going to end up in a slightly different reality, sure, but you're still going to be contained within the greater universal paradigms of this God entity who created this three-part program and implemented onto humanity. That's the reality. So people need to take a really good think about what they're doing, because inside of us is our natural organic state of being. We don't need these programs. We don't need these doctrines. We don't need these practices. All we need to do is be authentic from the heart. But you know what? You know, you've got this. I talked about the earthly matrix, and I talked about the cosmic matrix. Our earthly matrix, we've got our earthly egoic identity, which resides in our mental constructs, right? Now, what's happening is with the cosmic matrix, we also have a cosmic ego. You know, ETs have egos. Come to terms with reality, people. And where our cosmic ego resides is in the chakra programs, in those chakra systems. And that's what is appealing. These programs are appealing to people's cosmic egos. It's on another level, but it's still an ego that wants to think very much of itself, you know? And a lot of these people become very self-righteous and very judgmental, and they can't handle anything negative. And, you know, I'm all about embracing all of life, all my light and all my darkness. You know, I embrace all life and I love all life on all levels. And that's how you transcend duality. By embracing it all and bring it into zero point and balance.
Yep, interesting points. As I said before, I want to kind of detail run through these a little bit more in the second. The kundalini, the chakra system, and the pineal gland. You have an interesting section about how this kind of connects with the Saturn as well, and the Saturn matrix, I guess, and the planetary our solar system, basically. Let's do one more thing here before we take a break. How do you think that most people, I guess we can say, come up with some of these suggestions of what to do and feed into it? I remember like a few years ago there was something called, you know, fire the grid or whatever. These come up all the time, different kind of techniques or what you should do or shouldn't do or focus on or where you should put your intention or energy or whatever. Do you think that most of these things kind of come spontaneously to people, or is it a higher order than that, George? What do you think?
I'm going to say that both is happening there, and comes spontaneously. It'll be spontaneous to somebody when they receive, and I'm going to say these words, a download through the mental matrix into their mind, and they're going to think it's something that they've come up on their own. And then they'll think that they're very special and on a special mission, and, you know, it happens. It's prolific, actually, all over the planet.
Sure.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. No,
I've met so many Jesus Christs and so many Mary sure. Magdalenes and yeah. Isises and Horaces and Thoths and you name it, especially because I mix in these circles, and you'd be surprised just how many of them out there truly believe they are these beings. So it's prolific, and it's sad on one level. But, you know, that's their journey. They're going to find out the hard way. They've got to live that experience for them to realize what's going on. So all we really need to do is be, just be. It's so simple. And that means being authentic and living from our soul essence. You see, when we can turn inside out, we can emanate from our deep core soul essence and emanate our true beingness. You don't have to be anything else other than you. And because this is your soul journey, and you're in a co-creative process with a universal creator. So what's good for you, Henrik, is not necessarily good for me,
and vice versa. Yep.
So what we need to do is get in touch with our inner sanctum and our greater beingness. And from there, what happens is our mind then, instead of functioning under the external influences of the mind matrix, we re-entrain our mind now and realign it with our heart and soul essence. And I'm not talking heart chakra now. I'm talking beneath that, deeper, below that cosmic software program is our organic state of being. And so our core heart essence, if you're going to locate it somewhere physically, it's right in the middle of your chest. And when we go in there, we can then realign, like I said, our mind, our mental constructs. And what we're doing is we're re-embracing our earthly personality, in other words, our earthly ego. We embrace it. Don't live in denial of it. It's your personality interface for this reality. It's a part of you. These other programs are creating more internal divisions by getting you to deny your ego self. What we need to do, we need to embrace our ego. It's a part of us. And then we function in alignment from our soul essence and the understanding of who we are, what we need to do, the wisdom we need to do what we need to do, how we need to go about doing what we need to do, will come naturally from within each person. And it will be it's an amazing state of being, because we're all working in synchronicity with life and in synchronicity with one another, because that's the part of us that is in complete oneness and harmony and synchronicity with our Earth Mother, with our Father Son, with our Galactic Mother, and with the Universal Creator.
Yeah, and I think anything can be a trap, if you want to use that word, if you allow to kind of lose yourself in it. And I just don't understand what's wrong with just being who you are. It's always about breaking up with your own, you know, identity or where you're coming from or who you believe you are, and kind of going into this new kind of alter ego, as you said before, some kind of role that you play, because I think you're right there, George. It takes you away from being authentic. It takes you into another kind of mindset, if you will. And unfortunately, in that, some people become stronger. They get a stronger sense of purpose, I guess. And it feels more better all over. One of the most difficult things that there is to basically accept yourself as you are and kind of find yourself in that and accept the fact that this is who you are. And be content with that. That's one of the most difficult things there are. So many people are struggling with that, understandably, George.
Yeah, because our earthly ego is currently entrained in the mental mind matrix, and it has gets its identity too with the infrastructure in our societal constructs, like, you know, the job identity. You know, someone holds a high position of politics or in a corporation or a so-called spiritual leader and guru, what have you. And because we've also got our cosmic ego. This is the key element to understanding this, the cosmic ego. Because a lot of people, you know, have their greater fourth dimension, I call it the 4D aspect, in the cosmic ego. And that's what these other spiritual programs appeal to. And so people have their, they identify themselves through these programs, you see. Just like on an earthly 3D level, people identify themselves through whether they're in the military, like I said, or what position they have, what identity they have other than themselves. Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, sir, you know. No, his name's just John. Hello. You know?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's anything extra special. Sure, he has talents and abilities in other areas, but, you know, someone who's a cleaner is no lesser a human, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
And so we have in the 4D, what I call a 4D love and light brigade, their cosmic egos have been appealed to, so they've got all these identities now in all these different practices and doctrines and programs, and, you know, they can't live without them because
hierarchy.
They can't be that identity without them, whereas we can. You know, because when you strip away all these programs, Henrik, what are you left with? You know, it hurts. It really hurts because you're left with just yourself. Yeah. And it's just you that left standing there bare naked, bearing your soul to the world and to everyone and everything around you. And it hurts because this whole world has been created for people to live off programs and alter identities and alter egos, not to live authentically from the heart.
It's very true. I think we should take a break here and then carry on in the next segment. We have much more to discuss about these interesting ideas. And, of course, you can read more about it in the new book that we've been talking about, Our Universal Journey. Tell us, give us the websites and such, George, if you have one specifically for the book. And you know, anyone's going to give out here, of course, and also how people pick up a copy. I think it's available on Amazon and CreateSpace and most of these places, correct?
It is available on Amazon. We have a website specific for the book, and it's ouruniversaljourney.com.au. We have our base website, which is ourjourneyhome.com.au. We also have our own little radio podcast called Superwheel Radio. We're having lots of fun with that. I'm wet behind the ears when it comes to that. You're very, very well versed in that area, Henrik. And it's amazing how difficult it is to be on one side of the microphone and then to be on the other side of the microphone. So, I really give credence and credit for what you do. And also we have a doco that's coming out, which is called Our Journey Home, the Movie. And that's really a big deal for us. We've been filming for a year and a half now, and it does talk about ley lines. It does talk about controlling structures. There's lots of other people involved. We've spoken to an Aboriginal elder up here in the Flinders Ranges, and the origins of humanity. There's a little bit in there. It's only small but very significant, and it has to do with the origins of humanity. So look out for that. It's coming out in about 4 weeks.
All right. Very interesting. OurJourneyHome.com is also where you can reach the website, and also .au, as George mentioned. We're going to have all the links up specifically on redicecreations.com, so you can click through easily from our webpage, of course. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll carry on in a little bit. So stay with us, George, and we'll be right back with more. In Hour 2, George elaborates on higher beings that desire to be worshipped and have designed clever programs, including the chakra system, kundalini energy, and more for purposes of manipulation. He'll speak more in detail about spiritual deception. He also talks about the makeup of our true planetary being and talks about how the moon is used as a mechanical device. George explains how we can calibrate ourselves with the planetary being, and we end on his comments on a pending global mind control event. You can sign up for a membership at redeyesmembers.com and continue to listen to the second hour coming up, and then of course all our previous programs as well. We have archives going back to 2006. If you're not yet using our RSS feeds, I can recommend them, as it's a great way to get all the latest content right to your computer or a mobile device when a new program is available. We also have a lot of other material and features available for you on redeyesmembers.com. Next on the program, we have Randy Powell on vortex-based mathematics. We have also Carol De La Herran on Robert Monroe and consciousness technologies. After this, we have a roundtable with Scott Onstoff, Dan Tatman, and Kevin McMahon. And then further ahead, we have Richard Kisaro, Dean Clifford, John Lash, Richard Allen Miller, Johan Oldenkamp, Eric Kallström, and G. Edward Griffin. But next up, more from George in the second hour.